Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. First thing we will do is announce the substitutes, and we have Minister John Heggie replacing Sherry Gavin Walsh. My name is Lucy Stoyles, and I'm going to be chairing the meeting, substituting for Brian Ward. We have John Abbott, MHA Minister, substituting for MHA Brian Moore. We have Scott Reid attending virtually and substituting for MHA Pike. We have Chris Tibbs substituting for MHA Forsey. And we have Jim Dean substituting for MHA Brown. And again, welcome. So we don't have any members attending yet, but if we do, we would like to give them 10 minutes at the end if they do show up. So I need approval for that to happen. So can I ask for agreement? All right, so agreement and MHA Reid. Okay, thank you, Mr. Reid. So we will also look at taking a break if we need one, probably around 10:15, 10:30, and we will decide that as we're going through the morning. There is a few official information, I guess. Always identify yourself when you're talking so it can be recorded. Your mask of staff is asked to be worn at all times in the chamber, except when you're speaking. Of course, you can take your mask off. And we ask that you not adjust your seats. And water coolers are located just behind me. And as I indicated before, MHA Reid is attending virtually. And hope you're feeling good, MHA Reid. And look forward to seeing you come back later on the week. And as I said, other members of the committee. So now we're going to ask do we get the minister to, do we get the committee members to introduce themselves first? So we will start right here. And you march forward.
Craig Party, MHA District of Bonavista.
Chris Tibbs, MHA for Grand Falls, Windsor, Buckens.
Brad Russell, Director of Communications and Digital Strategy, the Official Opposition Office.
Jim Dinn, MHA for St. John's Center.
Stephen Kent, Sessional Support for the Third Party Office.
John Abbott, MHA, St. John's East, Kittiwitty.
Dave Hamlin, Sessional Support, Government Members Office.
All right, Minister, could you introduce
John Haggie, MHA for District of Gander, Crossroads of the World.
On my blind side, MHA Haggie. Sorry about that. Minister, would you introduce your staff, please?
Yes, I certainly will. Thank you, Chair. Jerry Byrne, Minister of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills. Delighted to be here. I'll ask my Assistant Deputy Minister, Katie Norman, to kick off with a self-introduction and introduce the team.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Katie Norman, Assistant Deputy Minister for Immigration, Population Growth.
Hi, Debbie Dunphy. I'm the Assistant Deputy Minister of Corporate Services and Policy.
Hi, John Tompkins, Director of Communications for Immigration, Population Growth and Skills.
Heather Craniford, Director of Employment and Training Programs.
Steve Wrench, Departmental Controller for Immigration, Population Growth and Skills.
Okay, I think we have everybody, so the next item on the agenda is the minutes, which was for May the 5th, 2022. And can I ask for a mover for those minutes? And they should be on your desk. Moved by MHA Tibbs.
Sure.
Second. MHA Dean. All in favor? Aye. So moved. MHA Reid, as I said, will be voting virtually, and so the motion is carried for the minutes. No. I ask the clerk to read the first headings.
For Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Executive and Support Services, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
So, one point one point oh to 1.2.0, and the first speaker is MHA Tibbs. Not a minister speaks first. I'm sorry, Minister, would you like to have some opening remarks?
You're very kind, Chair. Thanks, colleagues. Good morning. Really appreciate being here. I want to lead off by saying how much I value this exercise. We'll be able to provide a briefing binder, immediately following the estimates session this morning. Normally, I would have liked to have done that earlier, but I will preface by saying that today is the culmination of an incredibly busy day for the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, but in particular, the Office of Immigration and Multiculturalism. Our team, without any training manual or without any reference material, have embarked on a grand journey, an important journey, an essential journey, which is to bring Ukrainian refugees to Newfoundland and Labrador. This has been quite a fulfilling exercise, but a demanding one. And so much of our energies of the last several weeks have not only been in support of our team on the ground in Warsaw, Poland, but with working with employers and community organizations, faith community service organizations, in preparing for what is today a very important day. Today, an airlift of Ukrainian refugees will have left Katowice, Poland, or will be soon leaving Katowice, Poland, en route to St. John's, to Torbay, and we have done much preparation for that. And so I appreciate any latitude that may be provided on certain questions, but as we fulfill the manifesto and we get more details on the ground, as that final numbers and final circumstances, we'll be able to convey those immediately. I'll be providing the House with further details today, but just want to say how much I appreciated the general support and generosity of the House in bringing us to this point. I say this without any reservation, is that this is not the first time that the people of our province and this legislature has stood tall on the world stage. We did so quite inadvertently, quite unexpectedly, in the hours and days and weeks that followed September 11, 2001, when multiple aircraft were diverted to our province. It was unexpected. We were unprepared, nor could we ever be prepared for something like that. But we rallied and showed who we are as a province. Well, today is somewhat different, but still in keeping with the original ideas, the philosophies of who we are. Instead of receiving a diverted plane, an unexpectedly diverted plane, today we are directing a plane to Newfoundland and Labrador with those who are in harm's way. So today is a great day and an important day, and I want to say to the legislature, it's all of our day. So with that said, thank you very much. We have a small but mighty team, like much as the same we did in Warsaw, Poland, but it's an effective team, and I want to really salute, in particular, the team led by my Assistant Deputy Minister, Katie Norman, who sits to my left. There was no manual, there was no training guide. This was an exercise where we had to learn, adapt, establish best practices where we could, but innovate. And today is really just a remarkable achievement, considering that we did it on our own. And so that's hats off to Katie Norman and to her team at the Office of Immigration and Multiculturalism, and all the team that were in support from generally and broadly across government. We had people on the ground in Poland that had the capacity to speak English, French, German, Russian, Polish, and working knowledge of Ukrainian. So it's quite a feat. It speaks very well of the civil service, the public service of Newfoundland and Labrador. So with that said, I will conclude by simply saying thank you. There are no errors or omissions that are evident or aware that I am aware of in the estimates, and we'll be able to supply additional materials as required, as requested by committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. And we will move now to official opposition. MHJ Tibbs will get 15 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair. And yeah, we in the official opposition share with the Minister's remarks just now. It is a great day for Newfoundland and Labrador, but it's an even greater day for a portion of the people of the Ukraine to come over and get out of harm's way, like you said. I also caught your interview yesterday on the CBC National News. Well done, Minister. I got to say, I'm sure they're going to feel welcome, so well done. If we can just start off with some general questions. First of all, Minister, can we obtain two copies of your Minister's briefing binders?
Of course you can.
Thank you, sir. And are you still applying zero-based budgeting?
We examine budgets perennially from a view of cost effectiveness and efficiency. So that would be the model.
Thank you. And are there any errors in the published estimates book? I think you touched on.
No, we are not aware of any errors.
Excellent. Is the attrition plan still being followed? And if so, what are the changes for last year and this year, and how is it being measured?
Yes, the attrition plan is still being followed. That's a very in-depth question, which has many tentacles. So I will ask Assistant Deputy Minister Debbie Dunphy to reply.
Hi, it's Debbie Dunphy. Yes, we still are reviewing all positions as they become vacant as part of attrition management. Over the past year, we did eliminate four positions in with regard to a review of attrition. Two of those positions would have been ones that were actually transferred during the reorganization last year, but because we had them identified in our plan, they, I guess, gave us the credit, but so there were four.
Thank you. How many people are employed in the department altogether?
Minister, do you want me to carry on? Sure. We have 312 as of March 31st.
Thank you. And how many retirements have occurred in the past year?
13.
Thank you. How many vacancies are not filled in the department?
At March 31st, there were 57.
Okay. Have any positions been eliminated, and what were they?
So throughout the year, the 2021-22 fiscal year, we did eliminate 20 positions. Six of those related to secretariats that the department had been hosting that were our turn was completed.
Okay.
There were two that eliminated that were actually created in error. And we had the four attrition that I mentioned. Yeah. And we had six that they were vacancies that we traded off to assist with the expansion of the immigration office.
Thank you. And how many layoffs have occurred in the department in the past year?
We didn't have any layoffs.
Excellent. How many new hires took place this past year?
So it's kind of a bit of a mixed question. I guess what I'll say is we did have, we had 126 recruitment RSA actions, and we had 211 payroll actions. Now, some of those are just extensions of staff and such. So we don't have, I don't have a number for actual new hires, but that will give you an indication of the amount of turnover and activity.
Thank you. How many contractual and short-term employees are in the department?
So we have three, again, at the end of March, we had three what we would call 13-weekers, the temporary employment, three. And we have six contractual positions. And three of those contractuals are actually in our Office of Immigration. We're just going through the process of getting the actual positions created through the structure. We have one in apprenticeship, one in our policy division, and one in our executive division, which is our media relations manager.
Great, thank you. How many employees are working from home versus in the government office?
We currently have a pilot that's been approved through the Treasury Board that we have approximately 20 23 people approved to work from home on a pilot, which is somewhat of a hybrid because they are in the office 1 or 2 days a week. And then there are some individual circumstances where we may have like disability accommodation plans where we have some people who are working from home for medical reasons. And that's probably about 15 of those.
In addition to the 22?
In addition to the 23, yeah.
Thank you. Did your department receive any funds from the contingency fund? If so, how much and what was it used for?
No, we did not, not in 21-22.
Nothing. Great, thank you. It's great to see our Ukrainian friends are arriving today. I understand that there are 175 today. Can the minister provide any information on how many he expects to arrive in the province in the future?
Thank you very much for the question. It really is an important one. Hopefully it will be a significant number. So as we know, there are already Ukrainians in Newfoundland and Labrador. Those who have been repatriated with family members have already arrived by their own means. This is an airlift that was conducted based on our seeking of awareness on the ground in Poland. We found that in order to establish a strong Ukrainian community of, within a community here in Newfoundland and Labrador, and to draw further further interest and participation in coming to Newfoundland and Labrador, the most effective tool we could employ is to develop a personal relationship with Ukrainians. This cannot be achieved by a pamphlet. This would be the advice that I would give to other state actors, other governments. It is one thing for Ukrainians to come where family members may exist, where family members may be, and that would be the case in many provinces of Western Canada. But it's we have a small small diaspora of Ukrainians here in the province. We took a decision to establish a personal relationship with Ukrainians to best meet their needs in resettlement, to best give them an opportunity for an informed choice. There are Ukrainians that are already here. The airlift accomplishes many objectives. One is to provide immediate relief, but also to establish a community of Ukrainians within the community, which will draw more Ukrainians. We anticipate with the federal government's assistance through the Aeroplan program that the federal government is working with to try to draw more Ukrainians to Canada, but as well federal charters that may be on the horizon in the near future. We have already given notice to the federal government that we would like seats on any federal airlift to come to Newfoundland and Labrador, because quite frankly we have people ready to do so. For today, what you'll find is that while the aircraft will be able to accommodate up to 175, that's the estimate, there are some confounding factors such as, we're finalizing the manifest as we speak, there are those with acute medical public health issues, medical issues that may find themselves that were intended to be on the aircraft that unfortunately, we will not be able to be today. We'll find other routes and other mechanisms to get them there. We're providing every accommodation that we possibly can, but what is complicating this as well, is that the aircraft will not be taken off from Warsaw, Poland, as originally anticipated. The government of Poland has put in regulations, requirements, that no refugee airlift shall occur from Warsaw International Airport. So we've moved the airlift, and this is again, it's where there is no training manual, there's no guidance. You have to do this and do it on the ground and do it quickly. We're taking off from Katowice, Poland, which is located 4 hours away from Warsaw, and that is just an accommodation. So we'll have further information as to exactly the manifest later in today, but we will be actively engaged in promoting Newfoundland and Labrador as a great place for Ukrainians.
Thank you, Minister. What types of supports are provided once they arrive today?
The Association for New Canadians, our golden partner, our key partner, is working directly with the Office of Immigration and Multiculturalism to provide ongoing supports in short, medium, and long term. One of the things that that I take a particular pride in, and which was a direct intended result, was in that relationship building exercise, We basically effectively married Newfoundland and Labrador employers who came forward. We solicited Newfoundland and Labrador employers who had job vacancies, skill deficiencies, advised them that we would like to work with them to recruit Ukrainians with those skill sets that they require. And there will be people arriving from Ukraine, from Poland today, who effectively could start work in Newfoundland and Labrador tomorrow.
Excellent.
Do you expect that all of them will be able to find a family doctor? What are we doing with their health care?
We do. We've one of the things that we've take a certain amount of pride in is with our MCP coverage, we are relatively unique in the country. There are other provinces now joining with us in recognizing the need for publicly funded medical care. We do not anticipate, we've already connected directly with Health and Community Services and the regional health authorities. We do not see a problem in that regard.
Thank you. It'll be important to keep them here when the time comes. For the individuals that can, how long do you expect it will take each of them to get access to collaborative care clinic or family doctor? Will it be immediate?
That's a question that maybe regional health authorities might be best able to answer, but our collaboration thus far has been with both Health and Community Services and with the RHAs has been stellar. They've been at our working group table for the full duration of our planning.
Thank you. It definitely takes a team. There's no doubt about that.
Are employment positions arranged for all working age people arriving today?
No, there are some that are not necessarily work ready. Some will have language barriers. The proficiency in English is quite high amongst many, but there will be some additional supports that will be required to become employment ready. That's where we're already working with our service agencies, and in particular the Association for New Canadians, to be able to provide all those necessary services. But we are, with the manifest that we already have, we're very much aware of the group that's the individuals within the group that are coming to us.
Thank you, Minister. Some of our friends arriving today are likely dealing with trauma. Will they all have access to counseling services and a psychologist upon arrival?
There will be counseling services that will be provided. That will be part of the assessment as to the extent of those requirements, and we will act accordingly based on the clinical needs of our newcomers.
Thank you, Minister. Will our friends that are arriving today be provided funding for accommodations, food, and other essentials? If so, how much and for how long?
Yes, the answer is that in partnership with the Association for New Canadians, short-term accommodations will be provided for all. We are working directly. You may be aware that the federal government has the Prime Minister announced, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced with Minister Sean Fraser, a program to provide up to 2 weeks of temporary accommodation and up to 6 weeks of income support. It's one of the reasons why, colleagues, it was so important for us to establish opportunities for employment. One of the considerations that one would naturally make. If you or I were in this identical situation, God forbid, we would not move 3,000 miles on the basis of an offer of a bed sitting room or a basement apartment, notwithstanding the fact that that is incredibly generous and essential. But the totality of this situation must be addressed by those who are facing insecurity. They will need to know, and you and I would want to know, if we were in this situation, not only where will it be that we will live, where can we earn an income to be able to support ourselves, and where can we get access to other services, where will we go to school, will we have publicly funded health care? Those are the questions that we've, we've actively answered wherever possible. On the issue of supports, again, the federal government has introduced a program that we have directly inquired of Minister Fraser and our ministerial colleagues, Minister O'Regan and Minister Hutchings here in Newfoundland and Labrador, to make sure that that occurs for us.
Thank you, Minister. And I think more importantly, the community is going to come together. I hope so anyway. I'm sure they will.
Absolutely.
Minister, what language supports will be available for them? In particular, what language supports will be available for children in schools and college or university?
The Department of Early Childhood Education has received supports in the past to be able to provide additional services to refugee, to newcomers, in particular those that have language barriers and potential other learning requirements. So we have that in place. We'll continue to assess that. In terms of translation supports, language supports, for example, there is a translator, a Ukrainian proficient translator, on the that's on the manifest that will be coming here and joins us as a newcomer. So one of the individuals that we attracted to come to Newfoundland and Labrador was a professionally trained translator, and they will be making home, and one of the first job that they will have is providing translation services to the country. Ben.
Thank you very much, MHJ Tibbs. Your time is up now. We will go to third party, MHJ Dean, please.
Thank you, Chair and Minister. Thank you for certainly bringing the Ukrainian people, those who come to this province, and I hope we can make it work so that they will make this their home for sure. And I certainly join my colleague in offering thanks for that. I do want to start with just follow up on a few questions that my counterpart asked, which was basically, you mentioned that there are supports in place, or that for the you're going to be working with the Association for New Canadians and the Immigration and Multiculturalism, and there was a marrying of NNL employers with the Ukrainians. So I'm just wondering, are the people who are coming then, would they be professional skilled labor? Skilled labor, would they have a skill? I'm just wondering what their work experience or the background will be as far as employment goes.
Thank you very much for the question. The short answer is they are a reflection of Ukrainian society, and there are caregivers that will be caring for family members that that may or may not enter the workforce in the short or medium term. We'll certainly be offering them assistance if they so choose to do so. But the bulk are have labor market ready skills. Some from a technical perspective, some from a service, hospitality service perspective. One of the things that on that plane and the relationships that we've been developed is that there have already been job offers made in just about every, I say this cautiously, but in reflection of my own view of the manifest, in just about every labor market sector of the province, within our province, there will be individuals on that plane who can participate in the labor market here.
And I guess where I'm going with this as well, in terms of if you have, I don't know where we're going to go with this, but if we have people who are professionals, for example, maybe let's say a nurse or a skilled trades, and I'm just wondering in terms of the transfer of the accreditation, because they if they're coming into work in let's say nurses may not be able to work here because of the. I'm just wondering, is there a plan in place that if we do bring in people who have skills that we're going to try to not only marry them to an employer, but also expedite the process where they can maybe have those skills transferred or recognized. Is there anything around that area?
Thank you very much for the question. work has already begun last week or the week before. In the last number of weeks, I've met with the registrar of the college, College of Nurses in Newfoundland and Labrador. Lynn Power, to specifically on the accreditation, the acceptance of credentials of Ukrainian nurses as well. I've met with the registrar of the licensed practical nurses to find ways to effectively maintaining the high standards of the profession here at home, but effectively making inroads into accepting those credentials. One of the things that, as I reflected on this very issue, colleagues, I came to a realization that just as our healthcare professionals are incredibly dedicated to the people of Newfoundland and Labrador, so too are the health professionals of the Ukraine. Those with health backgrounds, in particular physicians and nurses, many of them are staying in the war zone. And that's where they feel that they're needed. So while there will be, we take no judgments ever whatsoever All individual circumstances are unique to the individual in question. There will be some with healthcare credentials that will be coming to Newfoundland and Labrador, if not on this particular airlift, but in the future. Those circumstances should not be in any way, shape, or form judged. There will be men on that charter. While we understand that there are Ukraine has asked, created a duty for fighting age males to remain in Ukraine. Ukraine itself has also made provisions for exceptionalities, for exceptions to be offered. And so when we greet these Ukrainians, we do so with open arms, and in no way should there be any judgment. And I know that that's not a reflection of this room, but as we as the faces disembark from that aircraft, there will be many people with many, many different life circumstances, and we should respect them all.
Perfect. No, when there are a number of stories, and I've talked to one or two people who are professionals. They may have medical background, but they're not unable to practice here, or they're unable to within their, because of the the regulations. So it would be nice to see that. Accommodations. They mentioned that we're looking at. By the way, with regards to the employer piece, was the same done for the Afghan refugees that who came here in the fall, in terms of marrying them with employers and putting the supports in place?
Short answer, yes, but short answer, no. And the reason why is because in the Syrian and Afghan situation, which was very unique, it was the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Refugees that, working with the federal government, that selected or identified the refugees in question that would come to Canada. We did not, and this is with all government-assisted refugees, federally assisted refugees, we do not have, as a province, an opportunity to develop a relationship with refugees when they are federally assisted, when they are federally established, federally designated government-assisted refugees. In that particular case, in both Afghan, with Syria and Afghan, and all events prior to, where Newfoundland and Labrador opened its welcome to refugees, they were brought to Canada by they were working with the United Nations. They were brought to Canada by the federal government. They were then sent by Canada to Newfoundland and Labrador, and then we began an active relationship upon their arrival. That is the system, or that is the norm throughout all of Canada, and has been for many, many decades. This is a unique situation in that these are technically, the Ukrainians are not federally designated government-assisted refugees. The UN High Commission has not so designated, because under the Dublin Convention, they do not meet the classical, what I would say with my tongue in my cheek, the classical definition and interpretation of a refugee, which is creating somewhat of a difference in their respective treatments. So, with that said, whereas the federal government offers to Ukraine, to Syrian and Afghan refugees, automatically the refugee is transported, airlifted to Canada. Immediately upon arrival, is given papers for permanent residency by Canada. An airlift occurs, or a distribution occurs, if I could say so in such a clinical word, but that's, you know, it's then they're parsed out to various provinces. There's very relatively little advance notice as to exactly how many, and in particular what the skill sets would be. Then, of course, the active participation begins in settlement supports. In those particular cases, the federal government provides up to and potentially further one full year of income support and housing supports, other supports. In the Ukrainian situation, which is very, very different, the federal government is not offering permanent residency. It's offering a three-year open work and travel permit, visitor permit. And that's why the relationship, why did we establish a desk in Warsaw, uniquely so? Because we knew right from the get-go that relationship building was absolutely essential for their success.
Thank you. So with regards to this, just a few quick questions in on that. I'd be interested, how many, and I'll put three, how many children are coming with the Ukrainian refugees? I guess I'm looking, wondering how many are going to be in the school system. And the other part of it is, I guess, how many of the Afghan refugees who came here and are actually now employed have a job? And the other one I'd ask is, how many of the Afghan refugees who came here in the fall are now permanently housed, not in temporary shelters or hotels or anything like that, but they've actually been moved into permanent accommodations? So there's three parts to that. I'm trying to get it in before the time ends.
No, thank you for the question. I'll answer the latter first. 100%. All are may be confused to some, or confusing to some, is that there's a sense that that's being somewhat exaggerated and becoming normalized, that our Afghan neighbors and friends that arrived as refugees are now occupying public housing, social housing, to the consequence of those others that would otherwise utilize that public housing. There are no Afghan refugees in Newfoundland and Labrador housing?
No, I'm not Newfoundland housing, temporary shelters. I'm fine if they're in Newfoundland and Labrador housing, but how many are they all permanent, all in like not in hotels or temporary shelters, but actually permanently housed?
Yeah. 100% are in permanent, not non-temporary housing.
Imagine, Dean, your time has expired. We'll go back to the official opposition.
MHA tips. Good chair.
That's helpful.
I think MHA didn't just talk about. I'll stick with this first. What information were our friends provided about life in Canada, in particular Newfoundland and Labrador?
We have a unique advantage in that, from a climate point of view, Ukraine and Newfoundland and Labrador are not necessarily dissimilar in many respects. Ukraine, like Canada, is a huge country, but Newfoundland and Labrador. One of the questions that would ask would what is life like? That's why, colleague, I say this. You know, we learned as we went, but you cannot do this by a pamphlet, by way of just simply, you know, handing out a pamphlet with a reference to a YouTube video. It is that face-to-face communication. So there was no. We did not oversell what Newfoundland and Labrador is. We didn't suggest this is like Tampa or some tropical climb. This is Newfoundland and Labrador. It was described as it was, and it was described beautifully, and accepted with just many people actually were drawn to the facts that we provided. So we did describe what the labor market was. They were astounded at how proactive we were in helping them identify job opportunities. So this is, if I were again, I said this earlier, if we were to repeat this exercise, or if other governments were to repeat this exercise, do not put up a web portal or hand out pamphlets at the embassy and expect to have success. It really is the measure of success are in these personal relationships that develop.
Thank you. And my colleague MHA didn't touch on it, but do you have a breakdown of gender and approximate ages of our friends that are arriving today?
We will have all of that. Like I indicated earlier, that the manifest is we want to be clear and factual. On the final manifest, complicating factors in this has been public health assessments for acute issues before embarking on the plane. I can tell you that we've already had some individuals within families that were impacted by that caused them to miss the plane. And that's unfortunate, but we had no choice. They had no choice. That was in following public health orders, with following good public health practices. So we'll be making accommodations for those individuals in the future. And so we're finalizing the manifest as we speak, and we'll have further details to come.
Sure. With an operation this size, we can appreciate it's not cut and dry at all. So we can move on to 1.101 salaries, if that's possible.
Sure.
There is $5,600 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, Minister, please?
We did have some staffing I'll ask Assistant Deputy Minister Debbie Dunphy to get into details.
Hi. So normally with staffing, like we had a new EA start with the Minister's office this year, so their salary was at a different level than the previous. And as we do every year, we do a salary plan for the department based on the incumbents in the various positions, and so the salary that's budgeted in the minister's office reflects the actual requirements we are anticipating for 22-23.
Thank you. And transportation and communications, there was $15,000 less spent compared to what was budgeted. Can you explain this and give us a breakdown of what didn't get spent due to COVID in the past year?
So again, of course, most of the reason for, I guess, a reduced expenditure is COVID. We do budget for the minister to be able to attend FPT meetings that are normally done through travel. But this year, of course, they were still being done virtually. However, we do anticipate that some of these meetings will occur again live in person. So we are planning. Of course, our minister is from Corner Brook, so the travel, of course, reflects those trips back to his district when the House is not in session.
Thank you. If we move on to 1.2.01, salaries. Budgeted salaries are $163,000 more this year than what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Go ahead, madam.
Okay, so you'll certainly, Debbie Dunphy again. So we did have some savings this past year. Half of our deputy salary, our deputy is responsible for two departments, so we're only paying half the salary. And we did have some delays in filling some of our administrative positions throughout the year. But again, for 22-23, all of our positions are now filled, and we are expecting That's what we anticipate being the requirement for that office.
Thank you, Ms. Dunphy. There was $16,100 less spent compared to what was budgeted. This is for transportation and communications. Can this be explained, and could we get a breakdown of what didn't get spent due to COVID?
Right. Again, it would be the anticipated or budgeted travel relating to FPT meetings that have occurred that this year has occurred virtually. But again, we are planning that some of this is going to resume again in 22-23.
Thank you. 1.2.02, administrative support salaries. There was $206,600 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Yeah, again, so during the year, we did have some vacancies in our finance area. We still have a couple of vacancies, but we're working getting those filled. And as well in this particular heading also supports our information management area. And there were negotiated salary increases this year, so they're reflected in the new 22-23 numbers as well.
Thank you, Ms. Dunphy. Employee benefits, there was $16,000 more spent compared to what was budgeted. Can this be explained, please?
Certainly. The majority of that head is for the workers' compensation costs of the department. And we did have an invoice related to the prior year that was paid, that related to 2021, that was paid in 21-22, which is why it was higher. But we are budgeting the same amount again.
Thank you. For purchase services, there is $15,800 less budgeted compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Certainly. We have done, again, as Minister stated at the beginning, you know, we do a zero-based approach and a review of all of our accounts. And we've looked at the historical expenditures in this account and felt that we could reduce that activity by about approximately $15,000. This mostly relates to copiers, file storage, file retrieval, those sorts of expenditures, our banking fees, those sorts of things.
Thank you.
For the department.
Thank you. And for revenue for the province, there was $210,000 less revenue last year compared to what was budgeted. Can this be explained, please?
Sure. Part of that, in 21-22, there was 160,000 of revenue that was included in our budget last year, but that should have been transferred with the reorganization to CSSD. So that's been looked after this year. That's the main reason for the decrease. And I guess overall, we did have a reduction in our miscellaneous revenue related to prior years. But again, it's something that, you know, we just look and manage annually, and it often relates to a prior year refund from whether it's one of our labor market partnerships that hasn't been fully expended. That's where that money would be deposited.
Thank you. And for 1.2.03 salaries, there's $145,600 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Again, it's mostly related to a couple of vacancies we've had in that branch, in that division. We actually had, I think, three positions that we had a retirement and someone else moved on. So it's just a delay basically related to recruitment. And so, again, we've looked at our complement now this year, and all positions have been filled, and so we're good to go.
Great, thank you. And just one last question for this subsection. Grants and subsidies. Last year there was $500 less spent compared to what was budgeted. Can this be explained, please?
Grants and subsidies. So in this section, we have an allocation for departmental service grants that when organizations apply for, they don't normally fit our regular, any of our programs throughout the department. So this is for mandate-related, I'll call them projects or opportunities that the minister or the department may be able to provide some small amount of support. So during this year, we had about five organizations that requested that we supported. But again, we've kept the funding whole to have it available if the requests do come in.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, MHJ Tibbs. Now we're going to go to third party, MHJ Dean.
Thank you, Chair. Just to finish, the question I didn't get an answer to had to do with the number of Afghan refugees who came here in the fall, and how many of them have found work or have been transitioned into the workforce. I guess I'm looking even at percentage of that, those who are employable, those who are seeking work, and how many have actually found work.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleague. A number of supports were put in place to be able to act on this. The situation with Afghan refugees was somewhat different, in that language proficiency was more intensively required, but we're making inroads there. There are many, many that notable inclusions in terms of employment, but I will ask Assistant Deputy Minister Katie Norman to be able to provide some additional details. She may have to get back with a further follow-up, but Katie, I'm not sure if you can add some additional overlay to that. Katie Norman.
Thank you. Katie Norman, Assistant Deputy Minister, Immigration, Population Growth. To answer your question, I don't have the most recent figure, but we can certainly get that for you. One piece of context I would give is just family composition was quite different. So the number of and language proficiency varied depending on gender. So there are definitely men who are working and have been working since shortly after arrival, but we can get you the final number on that.
And what I'm looking at is, I understand the composition might be different, but I'm looking for the number of those who are seeking employment or employable and those who are actually employed, and we found work for them.
Understood. Yeah. We'll get that and bring it back to you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I will pick up on a comment, Minister, that you made, and one that I wanted to bring up, and you touched on an important issue, actually. In reference to the number of people who are in Newfoundland and Labrador housing. And I'm just wondering here, and I'll put this in context, what are the plans to, I guess, an education piece for the population? Because I'll tell you, here's the issue I run into. I've heard in the election that And it's because it reflects just how, I guess, the tough times on people. And people see refugees or people of color, and they say, you know what? All these immigrants are getting the housing, and we're not. My concern is that there is an element of racism has always been here in Newfoundland and Labrador. There's no getting around that. But I'm just wondering in here, in terms of the education piece, because you just don't dump people in. You've got to find a way to educate the population. And realize, as I would constantly say, the people are not to blame. It's maybe the fact that we don't have enough of the resources we need to accommodate everyone or to take care of all the needs. But my concern is that as we become more diverse and multicultural, we've got to do. There's an education piece there. I know that Loidetta Kwaeko, with sharing our cultures and their groups, that do a wonderful job in this. But I'm just wondering when it comes to the provincial government. Are there any plans, more or less, to either in the curriculum or communications to start emphasizing the fact that, you know what, the people who come here and make this their home, this is their home. We need people to come to this province to add the vibrancy, the diversity, and the wealth to our to our province. I'm just wondering if that's something that you've run across, and if it is, what are the plans to deal with it? It's a concern of mine for sure, and I do see it.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleague. One of the most important commitments that you can make is to speak truth to the reality. Instead of voicing stereotypes or preconceived notions, this has to be fact-based, it has to be evidence-based. When we draw concerns, it would be always helpful, of course, to sort of ask questions if there's uncertainty as to what the answer is, the reality or circumstances are. Feel free, all colleagues can ask privately or and join with us all in reinforcing real messages, truthful messages as to exactly what the circumstances are with refugees. In, for example, the Afghan refugee situation, all school-aged children, all eligible school-aged children are enrolled in school 100%, with the exception of two social housing units provided by the City of St. John's. All Afghani refugees are in private sector housing, in housing that's readily available to each and every one of us. And in fact, it's one of the drawing cards of Newfoundland and Labrador. British Columbia, for example, my own conversations with colleagues and those aware of the situation, British Columbia, because of their particular housing market, are facing difficulties, have choices to make as to whether or not they can realistically adapt and support refugees. We have one of the best housing markets, relatively speaking, in Canada. It's tightening up everywhere, but we do have stock that is available, and so it's one of the things that we can use as a positive. The housing stock, the housing market, and other places is much tighter. We always have to just sort of reemphasize the truth, which is that Newfoundland and Labrador, on a percentage or per capita basis, we actually accept more refugees in this province and accept them successfully than, in terms of 2021, Nova Scotia and PEI combined. We are world leader. We are national leaders in this initiative, and we should not ever sort of suggest that we're doing a bad job. We're doing an incredible job. And that's something that the people of Newfoundland and Labrador, I think, takes pride in. It should not be. We should not lay low to those who may be less than informed, or would be driven by opinions that may not necessarily be reflected in the reality. I don't feel any need or fear from saying the truth, which is, We are welcoming refugees to Newfoundland and Labrador, along with other newcomers, racialized and non-racialized. We are a welcoming place. We're going to continue to grow with our strengths. Refugees, newcomers, bring with them jobs and economic growth. They bring with them skills. and they fill unfilled jobs with those skills and those talents, and we're going to continue to do so. And those that sort of sometimes reflect on who will provide health care, we have had decades of experience, of positive experience, who have been some of the leading healthcare leaders in our province, foreign trained healthcare professionals. That has been the situation for decades, and we will continue to nurture that for years to come while we train our own.
Thank you. Minister, can you provide an update on the work completed by the Ministerial Committee on Anti-Racism?
I can. We'll provide further details. With our intention is to provide what we've heard submission, but we've met with, I would challenge myself to recall, but over 30 groups, well over 30 groups at this point in time, also received written submissions, both via letter, email, but as well through our portal. That has been very successful. It's been very much welcomed, the work of the committee itself has been very much welcomed by so many racialized groups and those advocating and supporting and representing racialized groups, but as well from those from the community at large, whether it be the community sector council or others. This is an exercise which is fluid and ongoing. It's not meant, as we said earlier, that it was not meant to produce a final report because it was a living exercise. It was not meant to, it was never intended, and we communicated this very early, that we would hear from groups, we would act immediately on any with any intervention that we heard that that required, deserved immediate attention. We'd act on it with urgency, and we did that, and we'll continue on with this work. It's organic, and it never dies.
Thank you. Can we have a breakdown of the Job Creations Partnership funding, please?
I'll ask Heather Craniford to answer that question, but we certainly can provide that those details. Heather Craniford.
Heather Craniford, in 21-22, we provided 138 agreements to 540 individuals to get work.
Thank you.
Your time has expired, MHA Dean. MHA Tibbs, do you have any further questions under these headings? MHA Dean, yep. Do you have any
Please.
Further questions?
Yes. How many applications has the department received for projects to support the economic advancement of newcomers in Newfoundland and Labrador after its call for applications in December? And how many of the applications are selected for stage two of the selection process?
So one of the issues I think the Honourable Member will identify with is that in order to be as a participant in a job creation partnership, one has to be EI eligible or EI reachback eligible. So of course, obviously those who are newcomers, while being by being permanent residents, they would gain access to funding and supports under the Labour Market Development Agreement and the Workforce Development Agreement. Job creation partnerships in some many respects may not necessarily be an ideal vehicle for support of those activities. But I'll ask Heather Craniford if you may have any other additional details of any organizations that support newcomers or if any you're aware of any organizations or projects that support newcomers within your list.
Thank you. Heather Craniford. There's a number of programs and services that we offer, as well as, you know, we provide funding through the Association for New Canadians and other community groups to support individuals who may need employment and training types of supports and services. Any individuals who are non-EI eligible, residents of the province, and are on appropriate work permits, we're able to support through different programs internally, such as, you know, we may be able to provide some employers with wage subsidies to hire those individuals.
I was just looking for a number of applications and how many of the applications have been selected for stage two. So have there been any applications received for the projects to support economic advancement? And I guess how many of those and how many have been selected for stage two? Do we have that? If you can get me that information later, that would be great. That's the number I'm looking for. What was the total amount allocated to the multicultural grant program? And was the department able to distribute all of the 2020-2021 funding for this grant?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleague. This is a program that we're particularly pleased of. It's been incredibly successful, garners public support and newcomer benefit. So with that said, I'll ask Assistant Deputy Minister Katie Norman if you might be able to offer some additional perspective.
Katie Norman, I don't have the final total there on what was spent for settlement grants. There's about $30,000 allocated. It was not fully expended this year, but we have launched a new program that Minister Byrne announced earlier this spring, focused on increasing the engagement with settlement programming, which is closing soon, which is a Come Home Year initiative aiming to reach community organizations and really spread the multicultural activities throughout the year as opposed to just focusing specifically on Multiculturalism Month in March.
Okay. Can we get then maybe at some the amount spent up to now, for example, if that's possible?
Certainly. We'll provide that to you.
Appreciate it. Can we have an update on the progress of setting up the Economic Immigration Ideas Lab in Cornerbrook?
This is through the Workforce Innovation Center, yep. Colleague. We've worked very effectively with the Workforce Innovation Center. I'm particularly pleased with this initiative. This was something that that I approved back in my former days as Minister of this department when it was Advanced Education, Skills, and Labor, and it's. To utilize what a program, an element of the LMDA agreement that we had not previously utilized in the past, which was the research and development component of that of the agreement, and so we sought ways to innovate within the research of labor market. There was a vast the Workforce Innovation Center went and had community engagement sessions throughout the entire province. And I'm very pleased to report that we have followed up with phase two of those of that initiative to begin regional sessions in all areas of our province.
Thank you. Can the minister give us an update on the number of individuals who received assistance from the Autism Employment Program? And is this program being maintained in the new budget?
I'll ask Heather Craniford to follow up with that answer.
I don't have the current stats of how many individuals, but I can certainly get that from you. We are planning to continue the autism pilot for 22-23.
Thank you. And is the position of private sponsorship coordinator continued under this budget?
All current budgets would be maintained in 22-23.
With regards to 1.2.02, with regards to salaries, last year's budget 2021 in this book was written as $978,500. In last year's estimate book, the estimate for 2021-22 was written as $1,230,700. And that's a discrepancy of $252,200. I'm just wondering if that can be explained.
Assistant Deputy Minister Debbie Dunphy, would you be able to field that question?
Yes, Debbie Dunphy. So during the 2021 fiscal year, there was a reorganization where a portion of the department was transferred to Children, Senior, Social Development, as well as Environment and Climate Change. So there were financial staff that were transferred as well. And then during this year, there was a transfer of staff to Digital Government Service NL relating to the collections function. And so what was reflected last year compared to this year for 21-22 is a result of that reorganization. So it's a restatement.
So that occurs a few times in the in this. That would be similar. Then there's a few other times we've noted that.
Mainly under administrative support, but also probably under client services. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's about a bit there that I had. Everything else has been more or less asked by the by my colleague. But I do have one in the last few minutes, just an issue with, and maybe you can explain this to me. We I've got two immigrant families who are seeking permanent, or one family seeking permanent residency. Both have work permits, both fully employed here in the province. One of their children moved or was born here, has coverage, I guess, while they got the work visa, but two of the children do not have MCP coverage at all. Now, they moved from Saskatchewan where they had coverage for the full family, but somehow it seems that here, while they're here in this province, they're working gainfully. The child who was born in Canada has it, but the two children who were weren't born here, they're from Nigeria originally, are not covered. That seems to be a gap in, it's an MCP issue. I'm just wondering, in terms of encouraging people to stay, has this been encountered before? Is this part of the policy? And if it is, if there's a way of closing this, because you've got people who are looking to settle here who might just end up moving somewhere else. Anyway. I'm just wondering if we can, if there's a way of addressing this, if you heard of this issue before. And I can certainly bring up the details later, but I'm just curious.
Indeed. Thank you for that. The clock is running down, but I'll ask Katie to examine and get back to you. If you could provide specific details, because that is very much an outlier to what we would be aware of. But notwithstanding that, there must be consideration as to who exactly does receive MCP coverage. It must be intended for those that seek full-time residency and permanent residency in Newfoundland and Labrador. You know, it, I could say Canada has one of the most generous publicly funded medical care programs in all of the world, and Newfoundland and Labrador has probably the most generous within the Canadian Federation. You know, it's remarkable that international students that go to study in Ontario, Quebec, Manitoba, Prince Edward Island, receive what, from the moment they arrive as an international student, they receive no publicly funded Medicare. None. They have to take out private insurance. Newfoundland and Labrador not only provides publicly funded Medicare, but we extend that for post-graduation. In British Columbia, all international students have to pay $75 a month for access to the British Columbia medical care plan. And so, you know, when we think of the importance of medical care, of having the safety and security of medical care from the state, Newfoundland and Labrador is often seen as, well, there are many, we're just not pulling our weight. Just about 70%, it's close to 80% of all students that come from foreign countries to study in Canada do so without any medical care coverage. And but we in Newfoundland and Labrador, we provide that. And so while we're always anxious and ready to address gaps, we take no fear from addressing gaps. We always want to make sure that the services that are funded by the taxpayers of Newfoundland and Labrador are directed towards those that are actively seeking permanent residency in our province. So, Katie, I'll let you follow up. I'll ask the honourable member to follow up with some specifics, and we'll get back to him on the any details that we may be able to
offer. That'd be great.
Thank you. Thank you. With no further questions, I ask the clerk to recall the headings.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Executive and Support Services, 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 carry? I ask MHA Reid how he would like to vote.
I vote in favor.
All in favor? A carry. We're going to take a 5-minute break now, and we will be back. It is 10. So we're ready to get going again, and I'm going to ask the clerk to call the next set of headings.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Employment and Skills Development, 2.1.01 to 2.1.07 inclusive.
2.1.0 to 2.107, MHA Tibbs.
Thank you, Chair. We'll start off with Employment and Training Programs, 2.1.01. Transportation and Communications, there was $11,200 less spent compared to what was budgeted. Can this be explained, and give us a breakdown, please, of what didn't get spent due to COVID?
I'm going to ask Debbie while I just reorientate myself here. Debbie, would you mind?
Debbie Dunphy. Yes, so we just the normal, I guess, staff traveling to, you know, various offices and the day to day. So we had an increase again due mainly to the COVID restrictions. We did take some of that money in 21-22 and move it down to professional services for another purpose. But then again for 22-23, again, we are hoping that you know, some of our regular office visits and in-person travel will be occurring again.
Thank you, Ms. Dunphy. For professional services, there was $10,000 spent but not budgeted last year. Can you explain this, please?
So we have planned to do a review or a program evaluation on two of our programs in the employment and training basket of programs, our linkages and transitions to work programs.
Thank you. And for 2.1.02, Employment and Development Programs, Allowances and Assistance, can you give us a breakdown of how many clients were funded in each program?
Heather Craniford, if Heather, you may be able to provide answers to those questions.
I do have a list here, but I'd prefer to take it away and get that to you so that they're accurate.
Appreciate that. Thank you. For grants and subsidies, there is $250,000 less budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
So in the grants and subsidies, which are down by $250,000 in this year's budget, they're down from 6.9 to 6.65. This reduction, it was based on historical spending over the last 4 years. Historically, we spent anywhere between 6.3 to 6.5 annually. So this was part of the zero-based budgeting exercise, and we transferred that funding. Didn't disappear. We transferred that $250,000 to Office of Immigration for Settlements and Integration Programming.
Thank you, Minister. And can you give us a list of each organization that received funding and how much, please?
We can. Heather, I'll ask you if you would commit to that.
Yeah, we can certainly provide that after for you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to Employment Labor Market Development Agreement 2.1.03. And under professional services, there was $15,900 more spent compared to what was budgeted. Can this be explained, please?
Go ahead, Heather.
I'll just pass that to Debbie Dunphy. Sorry.
Hi, so it's Debbie Dunphy. Sorry, Mr. Tibbs, you asked about the
$15,900 more spent, the professional services.
Okay,
there was
so
15,
we did have a higher expenditure this year relating to a number of factors, our LMDA audit, our client employability assessments, and our program for the International Assessment of Adult Competencies. And, and again, we mentioned the evaluation of linkages and transitions to work. So we have increased our budget based on last year's budget, although it's not up to the projections for 21-22. But again, we looked at some system upgrades and related delivery of programs. What I'll also note is the operating budget under the LMDA, so we have, you know, just over $8.9 million that goes towards the administration of the agreement. And so we have the flexibility to move that around in the operating accounts and the salary account as necessary, but we can't go over the $8.9 million.
Thank you, Ms. Dunphy. Property furnishings and equipment. There was $33,600 more spent compared to what was budgeted last year. What was this for?
So that was getting some more additional laptops, again, so to enable the people to work from home during COVID. We did the bulk purchase in 2021, but this was to enable the remaining staff to ensure all staff had laptops.
Thank you. And under allowances and assistance, there was $14 million less spent compared to what was budgeted last year. Can this be explained?
Mm-hmm. Minister, shall I carry on?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. So we had about $10 million less spent in skills development and an additional $4 million less through our JCP, the Job Creation Partnership Program. And again, this is mainly due to the labor market conditions as a result of the pandemic. However, during, or I guess as part of the federal government's assistance to help us, you know, come out of this pandemic, they once again this year have allowed a carryover under the LMDA agreement. So we'll certainly, money not spent this year, we'll be looking to advance that this year to ensure additional supports are provided where possible.
Thank you. And can you give us a breakdown of how the funding in this line item is spent?
Under allowance?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Please.
So notionally, we do an allocation. We have about $45.5 million for skills development, which are usually the individual supports. We have $2 million for apprenticeship supports, $7 million for job creation partnerships, $5 million for self-employment assistance, $2.2 million for ABE for the college, and some another $400,000 for some other costs. And this is included in the binder, so you'll be able to, if you don't need to try to catch it all, it's included in the binder that will be provided.
Thank you. And can you give us a breakdown of job creation partnerships for the last year, including dollar amounts, group names, or provincial electoral district, and how many were employed, please?
Certainly. We'll have to provide that after.
Yeah, I'm sure it's quite detailed. Thank you. Can you also give us a breakdown of self-employment assistance recipients, including dollar amounts and business names?
Yes, so all of the grants, anything through grants and subsidies, will provide a detailed list in any of the program areas. Allowance and assistance is a little different because that's often paid to individuals, but we can certainly, again, anything that has an organization or the number of clients, we can provide.
Could you also include the ABE college payments by institution as well?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you so much. We'll move on to grants and subsidies. There was $29,220,600 less spent compared to what was budgeted last year. Can this be explained, please?
Yes, certainly. So, again, most of this was under job creation partnerships, wage subsidies, apprenticeship, trade certification, and labor market partnerships. And again, this is going to be part of the carryover for 2021, and it's pandemic and labor market conditions.
Thank you. There is $30,368,700 more budgeted this year compared to what was budgeted last year. Can this be explained, please?
That's the carry forward.
That's the carry forward.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes.
And can you give us a breakdown of how the funding in this line item is spent?
The grants and subsidies?
Yes, please.
Certainly, again, it's included. But we have a notional allocation of $3.5 million for job creation partnerships, $2.1 million for the self-employment assistance community coordinator, $10 million for the jobs and L wage subsidy, $3 million for the apprenticeship wage subsidy, $120,000 for opening doors program, $1.5 million for a wage subsidy community coordinator, $35.8 million for labor market partnerships, $14 million for employment assistance services, $2 million for research and innovation, And under this line as well is the $23.2 million we provide to College of the North Atlantic and $1 million to the Marine Institute.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
And can you also give us a list of employers that receive funding through the Jobs Newfoundland, Jobs NL wage subsidies, how many jobs were created by each employer and how much funding was received?
Certainly.
Thank you. And also, can you give us a breakdown of the labor market partnership?
Okay. Certainly. Yeah.
Thank you. Can you give us a breakdown, please, of job the JCP for last year, including dollar amounts, group names, the provincial electoral districts, and how many were employed? Different than allowances assistance section.
Yes. Yeah, we'll provide all of that.
And can you also give us a breakdown of how research and innovation monies were spent? Please.
Yes, we can provide that as well.
Okay, thank you. 2.1, I see my time is running out. We can come on back before I get into.
Come back. Thank you.
Yeah, it's 2 seconds.
MHAD.
In 2.1.03, again, it's part of the same explanation, but I'll ask it. In last year's budget, in this last year's budget, 2020-21, in this book is written as $94,938,300. Last year's estimate book, the estimate for 2021-22 was written as $95,150,700, and that's a discrepancy of minus $212,400. And there also appears to be a similar discrepancy under 2.1.05 EAP for persons with disabilities. Grants and subsidies were, I think, plus $212,400. I'm assuming that there, it looks like some of the grants were shifted around. Would that be the case?
So, Debbie, I don't know if you or Heather might be able to. Debbie, go ahead.
Yes, so we did a restatement. There were the $212,400. That's part of the employment assistance for persons with disabilities that we provide to College of the North Atlantic. And when we did the reorganization last year, or year before now, with education, that piece was put back under the larger labor market development heading, and it should have been under the employment persons with disabilities, or under the college?
The employment assistance for persons with disabilities.
Yeah, it should have been under the employment assistance. Sorry, it should have been under the employment assistance for persons with disabilities. So it was a restatement.
Thank you. In 2.1.04, workplace development agreement, transportation and communications, this year has $0 estimated expense. Any reason for that?
So under that heading, again, as part of the administration under workforce development, what we have budgeted previously related to the telephone landlines, and that cost is now under the regional operations budget.
Thank you. Also, under their allowances and assistance, last year's actuals were $120,000 under budget.
So we did have some savings related to educational assessments, apprenticeship supports, and the block training. And again, it's mainly due to labor market conditions as a result of the pandemic. And also, similar to the carry forward provided by the federal government for the labor market development agreement, there's also been a carry forward provided for the workforce development agreement. So any money is not spent this year, we have the ability to carry some of that forward for next year.
Thank you. Also in 2.1.04, grants and subsidies. Last year's actuals were $2,495,000 under budget. This year's estimate has decreased by some $8,816,400.
So the change for this budget year, again, last year there was a carry forward from the previous year because of the pandemic. So that carry forward now has been the carry forward from 2021 has been removed, and that's why it's down by the 2.5 million.
Okay, thank you. In 2.1.05, employment assistance programs for persons with disabilities, allowances and assistance. Last year's actual were $600,000 under budget. This year's estimate has decreased by some $1,679,900 down to $8,130,100. This is the same as the 2021 budget. Was there a one-time allowance?
Yes, that's correct. It was a part of the carry forward from 2021.
Thank you. Grants and subsidies. This year's estimate has been decreased by 96,400. What's the reason for that?
It's the same. It was part of the carry forward, so it's one-time removal.
Thank you. In 2.1.06, youth student services, allowances and assistance. Last year's actuals were $80,000 under budget.
So this line item it relates to the tuition voucher program, and so it's based on what has actually been submitted by the students to be cashed at the post-secondary institution, and so the expenditures is just lower than anticipated, and we did do a budget reduction for next year to reflect that based on, again, what we're seeing.
Thank you. And in grants and subsidies in that same section, what's the reason for the decrease in your estimates this year for some $185,000?
So this is one of the areas, again, that we had a look at as part of our zero base. And we felt that this is provincial dollars, and we felt that we would be able to better utilize our federal agreement, LMDA and WDA, in terms of our wage subsidy programs. So we've reduced the budget here on the provincial line, and we're going to optimize our federal agreements for this purpose.
Okay. In 2.1.07, apprenticeship and trade certification, salaries. Last year's actuals were some $357,300 under budget. This year's estimate has decreased by a further $157,300. What's the reason for that, please?
So again, it's the projection is based on several vacancies we had. We had some retirements and some vacancies in the division. So again, annually we review all of our positions and prepare a salary plan based on what we anticipate spending and filling during the 2022-23 year.
Thank you. And professional services. Last year's actuals were $35,000 on the budget. What was the reason for that?
The savings there related, again, mainly to completing the site visits to the training institutions. And this is not our staff, but this is the per diems for the various provincial trade advisory committees. But hopefully, again, we are hoping that a lot of that will resume again this year.
And purchase service, last year's actuals were some $1,215,000 under budget. What was the reason for that?
Well, that relates again to the labor market development program for industrial training. So this reduction again is a overall for demand skilled trades training, but again with that part that can be included as part of the carry forward under the LMDA.
Thank you. Grants and subsidies, this year estimate has decreased by over $155,000. What was the reason for that?
So that was the completion of a federal project. We had federal funding for advancing women in apprenticeship, and that program or that project was completed.
Okay. And federal revenue. Last year's actuals revenue was $1,200,000 under expected. What was the reason for that?
That's the federal revenue related to the 1.2 in the purchase services under the LMDA.
Okay. And it was that under then? It was under executive.
Pardon me?
It seems to have been under.
Yes, so we didn't spend the $1.2 million in purchase, so then we don't recognize the revenue under the same heading, but it's carried forward.
Perfect, thank you. In 3.1, I'm out of it altogether. I will go back ask a question, though, with regards to in skills development, I guess, employment and training programs, I'm assuming here, but with the skills development program, and I think there's federal funding for that, and I brought this issue up with regards to students who are, people go back to post-secondary unable and lose their drug coverage. Is that a federal requirement, or is that a federal policy or requirement if they receive funding under this program, or is that provincial?
Heather, Minister.
I think we're going to have to.
I'm just trying to, with regards to the cases I brought forward of a person who went through the skills development program, the funding that's administered by your department, but it's federally funded. In this case, as anyone pursues post-secondary education skills upgrade, they lose the coverage of their, they lose drug coverage, the NLN PDP program. I'm just wondering, if they apply to this, is that a policy or a requirement of the federal funding that they not receive, or is that a provincial policy that they would lose their drug coverage?
Yeah, I'll ask Heather.
Hi, Heather Craniford. The NLPDP is a provincial program, but under the skills development, we provide any of the incremental costs of training for the individuals. So individuals can be funded for health plans. So if there is a plan offered through one of the public training institutions, we would indeed support them for that. We would also provide anything that would be cost shared for the individual as part of the NLPDP under that program.
And I was just trying to think, so the loss of the drug coverage, is that a policy? Like, I know, but the fact that these individuals lose their drug coverage, is that that's entirely within the province, or is that a requirement of the or the plan itself?
That would be, from the NLPDP perspective, that would be our Department of Health and Community Services. We would support any of the costs for either the NLPDP or private or part of their training institutions' drug coverage. Okay.
Thank you, MHAD. Your time has expired. MHAD.
Thank you, Chair. Just some general questions here for 2.1.07, apprenticeship and trade certification. How many active and newly registered apprentices are there?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleague. We can get that information to you. Oh, sorry. Debbie, you wanted to, oh, well now, this is the binder that we all need. So active apprentices, as of March of 2022, we have 3,547. I think someone anticipated this question. Newly registered apprentices, 596. Block exams administered to date is 692. Red Seal exams administered, 760. Apprenticeship training classes conducted to date, 128. Apprentices who received in-school training, 1,024. Apprentices who received journeyperson certification, 306. Journeypersons who received specialized training to acquire new skills, 47. Trade advisory committee meetings were 52 in number. And the average age of journeypersons, just in case you might ask, for all trades was 55 years. The average age of active apprentices for all trades was 34 years old.
Thank you, Minister.
I can certainly get that to you in a straight written form.
Oh, that's great. We understand that the NLPNP program applications are approved in a fairly timely manner. But we are hearing about longer delays with the federal component. Can you give any insight on this? We are hearing from professionals that work with employers to bring in international workers that the delays with the feds have increased substantially. Can you elaborate on this, please?
No, I'm just going to ask for the NLP, sorry, just the acronym.
Provincial nominee.
Okay, back to, well, yes, it is correct. We, with the addition of our complement of new staff, which we spoke of last year, we're very proud of the expansion of the Office of the Immigration and Multiculturalism team. We put in, I think, Katie, 17 new positions, 18 new positions in the department. That has been a phenomenal success in advancing. We have a service delivery time now of just about 60 to 80 days in terms of processing a provincial. I think actually it's even better than that now. But why don't I just ask Katie to answer this question, because she has brought it down to 25 days.
Wow.
For provincial processing. You're quite right. The federal side of the processing has gone to 27 to 36 months. Mm-hmm. the federal government transferred some staff from processing immigration applications to processing CERB applications. It's one of the reasons why there's a significant backlog. But I think Katie should take the floor now, because she deserves some accolades and really how much we've mastered this process.
Katie Norman. Thank you, Minister, and thank you for the question, MHA Tibbs. So you're very right that there's quite a difference from a processing perspective. We process the nominations and the endorsements under the Provincial Nominee Program and Atlantic Immigration Program. After that time, an individual has to submit their application to the Government of Canada, and there can be a period of time because there are additional documents that they require, so that can add a few weeks just on the individual side. But once the application goes in, there's been significant delays, and many of them have to do with yes, the reallocation of staff to other initiatives like the Afghan resettlement and now more recently Ukraine within the Government of Canada. But in addition, there have been COVID-related impacts to the closure of visa processing centres internationally and the processing issues related to actually landing permanent residents, so actually having family members be able to enter Canada. We've been actively engaged with the Government of Canada to stress the impacts of that on individuals. And I think there are significant federal efforts. The federal minister has made a number of announcements related to digitizing applications, hiring additional staff to address that. But I think the most recent number is the Government of Canada has over 2 million applications in queue for permanent residency. So it's a significant issue for that government.
I bet. Thank you very much. Just one final question, and forgive me if I'm mistaken, or correct me if I'm mistaken, but when the Afghan refugees arrived, I was under the understanding that the federal government would pay for their housing for 1 year. That year will be up soon, I assume. What happens after that? Does the province then pick up the tab for what's left over, or do we transition something else to the federal government?
All Afghan refugees do become permanent residents of Canada, and so therefore are eligible under law and good best practice to be able to receive supports as any other citizen, any other resident would be able to receive. Really the premise of the question is, are they at a point where they would continue to need offsetting supports? Many have gone to work, and we'll be able to answer that question shortly, just in terms of the actual numbers. We work with the Association for New Canadians who really case manage each and every one of those files. So we'll get that information to you. But the reality, the answer is that our efforts are to fully integrate and to bring them into self-sufficiency mm-hmm. within the workforce. If required, yes, they would be same as you or I. We'd be able to sure. receive benefits under permanent residency programming.
Great. Thank you, Minister. That's all I have for that heading.
Thank you, MHAD.
Just one quick question, if I can, just with regards to the overall vacancies, it's brought up here as well. I think there was mentioned that there are 57 vacancies within the department. And is that is the 312 that you have employed take into account those vacancies, or the 312 less plus the vacancies would bring it up to what, 367?
No, it's 312 were the number of employees.
Right.
So yeah, the 57 would be in addition. Now that was at the end of March.
Right.
So that number today, it would likely be a little different as, recruitment continues.
It seems to be across every department I've set, like Estimates Committee I've set in on, and others, there seems to be an awful lot of vacancies across the government departments. Any reason for that, especially here in a department where you're really trying to help, primarily help with the immigration and help newcomers settle here?
Minister, if I could, I guess, Debbie Dunphy, sorry. I think some of this is just, natural, turnover. The immigration office, we did do a very large recruitment effort for that office last year, and it is continuing. I mean, we still have, we do have a few vacancies there, and there's actually interviews going on this morning, so that we're working to try to keep those filled. In our regional offices, we've done considerable work to ensure we maintain a sustainable level of service to all of our clients. And again, I think it's just a little bit of a delay in terms of trying to get some recruitment done. But I will say that the Public Service Commission and the Strategic Staffing Division have certainly stepped up their efforts over the past few months and the past year, and we've been very successful in getting some of our vacancies filled and some of our recruitments that, you know, have some of our vacancies that were some long-standing ones have now been filled. And so, yeah, I think if we were to pull that number today, I think you would see some of that those numbers decrease.
So would it be possible to have the updated numbers as of today?
Certainly.
That are actually filled, and a breakdown as to what the vacancies are, I guess what the jobs are?
Certainly, we can provide.
Thank you. And that's it for me on that section.
Thank you. No further questions. I ask the clerk to recall the heading, please.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Employment and Skills Development, 2.1.01 to 2.1.07 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.0 to 2.1.07 carry? I call the question. MHJ Reed, how do you vote?
I vote in favor.
MHJ Reed votes in favor. Carries. I ask the clerk to call the next set of headings, please.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Regional Service Delivery, 3.1.01.
3.1.01. I ask the opposition, MHJ Tibbs. Questions, please.
Thank you, Chair. And we'll start off regional operations and salaries. There is $212,700 more budgeted than what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
So it's Debbie Dunphy. The increase mainly results in the negotiated salary increases, as I mentioned earlier. And under the LMDA, as I mentioned earlier, we have a percentage that we can use for administration. And so in order to maximize that, sometimes we'll use some of the funding we'll apply some of the administrative funding to the client services in order to reduce the provincial contribution.
Thank you. And under transportation and communications, there is $100,000 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained for this year, please?
Again, pandemic-related travel to various job and project sites is the main reason for the decrease.
Well, let's hope that's over with.
Yes.
I think we can all agree on that. Purchase services, there's $62,500 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
So if you recall, for a portion of this year, we did have some of our offices closed mm-hmm. because of the pandemic, some of the costs are lower, copier costs, paper costs, those sorts of things were lower. But, you know, we do have all of our offices open again now and people back at work in the office.
Thank you. And for property furnishings and equipment, there was $12,000 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
So recognizing that, you know, we have a big portion of our staff, over 250 of our staff are in our various regional offices. I think that increases to recognize that what is required for those folks in terms of desks, new chairs, those sorts of things. We thought it would be prudent to increase that budget to reflect the requirement.
Thank you. And that concludes my questions for this heading, Chair.
Thank you. MHJ Dean, please.
Salaries. Last year's actuals were over $60,000 under budget. What was the reason for that?
So, as I guess I explained, we used a portion of the LMDA to reduce the provincial contribution there.
Okay, good. And last year's budget in this book is written for last year's budget for 2020-21 is written as $4,517,000. Last year's estimate book, the estimate for 2021-22 was written is $5,189,800, and that's a discrepancy of down by about 672 600,000. Am I assuming that that's the same thing as we've heard, a restatement of a
yes.
of the budget? Okay. And that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. I ask the clerk now to call the heading.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Regional Service Delivery, 3.1.01.
Shall 3.1.01 carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
I ask MHA Reed how he would like to vote.
I vote in favor.
You vote in favor and carries. I ask the clerk to call the next set of headings, please.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Immigration and Workforce Development, 4.1.01 to 4.1.02 inclusive.
4.1.01 to 4.1.02. I ask MHA Tibbs.
Thank you, Chair. We'll start off with some general questions, Minister. Can you provide a breakdown of the provincial nomination program numbers and the Atlantic Immigration Pilot endorsements, please?
Yes, I certainly can. I'll ask Katie to forward some additional information, but you may have that off at hand. But we are performing now better than we ever have in our history, so it's, I'm very pleased with that. So go ahead there.
Katie Norman. So, and Minister is correct, in 2021 we had the highest ever usage of the provincial nominee program with 1,420 people supported to permanent residency through that program. 596 of those, and this will all be in the binder, but okay. 596 of those were principal applicants and 824 were family members. And under the Atlantic Immigration Program in 2021, we had full utilization of that program for the first time in the province's history. So full utilization was 442 primary applicants, joined by 322 of their family members, for a total of 764 individuals supported, which means that in 2021, and immigration runs on a calendar year, so not as neat and tidy with the estimates book, but from January to December, almost 2,200 people 21 and 84 were supported to permanent residency through those two provincial programs.
Great, thank you. Can you provide a breakdown of retention rates by immigration class with a comparison to the Atlantic provinces by landing year?
Go ahead there, Kate.
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Katie Norman. So for the most recent data we have is for individuals from 2019. Which is Statistics Canada information. So for individuals 1 year, so those that arrived in 2018, in the 2019 tax year, the overall retention rate for Newfoundland and Labrador was 61% retention rate. And that varies by group. So for economic class, it was 57%. Provincial nominee program, 60%. Family class, so family reunification, 73%. And for refugees, 69%. For individuals who arrived in the 2016 landing year and the 2019 tax year, so 3 years after arrival, the retention rate was 50%. Refugees were the highest at 61%, followed by family reunification at 59%, provincial nominees at 46%, and economic class at 42%. And then finally, 5 years after arriving, so those arriving in 2014 landing year, in 2019, 46% of individuals arriving to this province remained here. And I will note that while that is, you know, maybe a less than ideal number, I think we can all agree there's room for improvement there. It is the second highest in Atlantic Canada. So 44% of federal economic class immigrants came through the were remaining, 45% of provincial nominees, family reunification 62%, and refugees 41%.
Thank you, Ms. Norman. And can you provide a breakdown of retention rates of international students and out-of-province domestic Canadian students that have attended our post-secondary institutions by landing year?
We can indeed provide that.
Excuse me, sorry.
I'm going to interject something else as well, is that there are many who say that we're not doing very well with retention. We are the second highest in Atlantic Canada, at New Brunswick and PEI trail behind us. The five-year, data, I think, is most relevant because, of course, if the intention is for permanent residency, it's less. It may be less relevant for the first or third year. It's 5 years that really show how well we're performing. But I'll also say this in terms of retention. It's very important to recognize that this is the first year that we're fully utilizing our immigration pathways, our economic immigration pathways, because in previous years, what was happening where, I'll put this in a perspective, in Ontario, the number of nominations that Ontario is able to offer their newcomer community, they exceed that within months of the calendar year. And so with Newfoundland and Labrador sort of still retaining certain, unfilled nominations, what you have is you actually have newcomers who targeted or directed themselves to Ontario that have kind of roots in Ontario, getting rejected in Ontario, and then employers and themselves coming to Newfoundland and Labrador as a potential safer haven to get their permanent residency and then move back, because they're not intentionally coming to Newfoundland and Labrador. This is me talking. This mm-hmm. is my analysis. When you fill up your own province's nomination, these are people who are deliberately targeting Newfoundland and Labrador. It's their intention to come to Newfoundland and Labrador. They don't have a pre-existing attachment to Ontario or anywhere else. This, I think, is going to be very remarkable in improving our retention. So we're already second highest in Atlantic Canada, but in the years Nova Scotia has maxed out theirs some time ago, their nominations, the number of nominations they're allowed to submit, they maxed out their numbers some time ago. Now that we are at the point where we are actually, and I say this because we want to improve our numbers, we're applying, we're asking, we're expecting higher numbers from Ottawa in future years, but everyone who we nominate was an intentional Newfoundland and Labrador destined newcomer. And so I think that's going to drive and improve our numbers. Katie, I don't know if we have the academic data that the MHA TIBS asked for.
Katie Norman. So some of that data, particularly related to other domestic students, would be housed by Department of Education, but we can certainly...
We'll move on to 4.1.01 offices, salaries. There was $1,007,300 more budget last year compared to what was spent last year, this year compared to what was last year. Can this be explained, please? For salaries.
Katie Norman. So the increase in salaries for the Office of Immigration and Multiculturalism reflects the expansion of the office with the 18 additional positions, noting that the funding that was put in place in last year's budget made the assumption that the positions would be filled only for half of the year just because there was a recruitment process. So we have gone through that. We have actively filled all the jobs at one point and have had some departures for positive reasons. I'll just put it to that, so we're still finalizing some of the positions, but we're at almost full capacity within OAM right now, so that should be fully expended this year.
Thank you, Ms. Norman. And under professional services, there is $507,600 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Yes, certainly. So under professional services, you'll be aware that there was a commitment made to putting additional money in place to promote the province. Last year, and again, that funding was intended to be $2 million annually. We put $500,000 of that under professional services and the remaining additional $1 million under purchase services, simply because depending on how you spend your marketing money, in some cases, if it's a media buy, it's a purchase service, where if it's a graphic design or consulting advice, it comes from professional. So that's just the full year amount for that initiative.
Gotcha. And under purchase services, there was $704,700 more budget this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained and with a breakdown as well?
Yeah, certainly. So that is also a result of that funding being annualized, so the full year. amount being included there. Under purchase services, that funding is, a large portion of that is dedicated to marketing and promotion, but it also includes translation services and fees that we pay to attend international affairs and immigration promotion initiatives.
Thank you. And under grants and subsidies, there is $1 million more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained as well, please?
So the $1 million additional, you may recall that on budget day, Minister Cody and the Premier, Minister Byrne, announced that there was $1 million made available to support Ukrainian refugees, and that's what that $1 million is for, which is the work we're doing with Association for New Canadians.
Thank you. Under 4.1.02 workforce productivity secretariat salaries, there is $18,600 more budgeted this year compared to what was spent last year. Can this be explained, please?
Related to salaries?
Yes.
So salaries reflect negotiated salaries increases, but have also been offset by a review of salaries within the department. We had some people who were, you know, more senior move on, and more new employees join at a different pay scale.
Perfect.
Same
Thank
pay
you.
Scale, but different step on the pay scale.
Thank you. I just have one last question, and then I'm done. Okay.
Sure.
Professional services, there was $65,000 more spent last year compared to what was budgeted this year. Can this be explained, please?
Yes. So under professional services, there was a decrease related to savings associated with the Atlantic Workforce Partnership. So that is a multilateral group of the four provinces. And we required less funding for that initiative for that year, so that's why that's lower. And then if you look at this year, you'll see a reduction, and that's due to the fact that the Council of Atlantic Premiers had a one-time funding increase in the previous year that wasn't required in this year, just basing the budget across four provinces.
Thank you, Ms. Thorne.
Program, how exactly does that work? So someone either moves to another province or wants to come in, how would that work? Just, I guess, in broad strokes.
Sure. So a provincial nominee program has a range of categories under it. At the most simple level, the way I can describe it is there's a category for an individual who comes as a skilled worker, there's a category for an individual who is an international graduate, and then there are two categories under the entrepreneur screen, one for international graduate entrepreneur and one for international entrepreneur. There's various eligibility criteria under those streams in the program, but all of them require a job offer. So an individual has to be able to demonstrate that they do have a year-round full-time job offer that meets the criteria of the program. So effectively that there's a skills alignment between their education, their work experience, and what they're planning to do in Newfoundland and Labrador. The assessment, so the nomination does involve the employer having to, it's an individually driven program, so the individual applies for provincial nominee program, a little bit different than the Atlantic Immigration Program, which is more employer driven. The employer does have to demonstrate that they, that this is indeed a bona fide job offer and the terms and conditions around that job. There are also assessments done on the eligibility of the individual related to details around their sort of any past criminal record. We do fraud detection. We also look at the financial viability of the individual to ensure that there's that their financial status would allow them to be able to settle in the province. So we do assess that that as well.
And they'd be able to, if they have family, children, they would come with it.
That's right. So you can bring a dependent spouse and children. Under that nomination, there's no limit on the number of additional, the minister spoke to the number of spaces that we have, but we don't limit the number of family members who can come. Okay. It's only the number of primary applicants that we have a cap on.
Okay, perfect. Just to go back, my colleague from Grand Falls-Windsor and Buckins asked a few of them, but I just wanted to talk about the actuals and salaries. I don't know if we addressed these. Last year's actuals were some $200,000 under budget. What was the reason for that? In 4.1.01.
Uh, So under 4.1.01, we established 18 new positions. And what I would say about those jobs is that they're very specialized. So we had recruitment effort that involved a number of individuals who were actually recruited from outside of Newfoundland and Labrador into those specialized roles. So in some cases, unfortunately, we weren't able to get everybody hired with the right credentials that we needed as quickly maybe as we would have liked. But I'm very pleased to say that we have an extremely strong team. The minister spoke of that in his reference to the team that we sent to Warsaw, and the fact that we were able to draw on all of those languages and international competencies speaks to, I think, the effort that went into the recruitment there, and that's a testament also to Debbie and her team on the recruitment side. So that's why.
Excellent. And under professional services, last year's actuals were almost $62,000 over budget.
So yes, for professional services, what ended up happening there is we had funding actually allocated. You'll notice if you look at the grants that they were down by just under $100,000. That's because the funding, when we decided how we wanted to roll out the intercultural competency training for the public service, at one point it was thought that that could be done through a grant-based process, but it was actually done through a contracting process with three different organizations. So the $60,000 there almost $62,000 was as a result of contracts that we signed with three organizations to support intercultural competency.
Thank you. And purchase service, last year's actuals were almost $270,000 under budget.
So that has largely to do with the fact that, I think COVID dragged on longer than we've all wanted. And as a result of that, we had fewer requirements related to international marketing associated with international recruitment events. So that's where you see the discrepancy there.
And salaries, again, last year, and 4.1.02 Workforce Development Secretariat. Last year's actuals was almost $128,000 under budget.
So those were results of a delay in filling one position and also a leave of absence for a period of time.
Perfect. Thank you. That's it for me, Chair. I will take a minute just to say thank you to the staff. Anytime you're a department where you're dealing with people, I don't care how good they are, it's a complicated and taxing job. So thank you for your efforts, and certainly anything that brings new people to the province and increases the diversity is welcome. It's going to make this province stronger for sure. Thank you.
Thank you. With no further questions, I ask the clerk to recall the headings.
For the Department of Immigration, Population Growth and Skills, Immigration and Workforce Development, 4.1.01 to 4.1.02 inclusive.
Shall 4.1.01 to 4.102 carry? I ask them, hey, do you read?
I vote in favor.
He votes in favor, so carried.
The total.
Shall I call the total to be carried? All those in favor? I ask MHA Reid, how do we vote?
I vote in favor.
He votes in favor. Carried. Shall I ask for the estimates to the department? Shall I report the estimates to Department of Immigration, Population, Growth, and Skills? All in favor?
Aye.
I ask MHJ Reid.
I vote in favor.
You vote in favor? Carries. I'm asked the minister if he has any, would he like to have any closing remarks?
Thank you, colleagues, very much for the time spent together and the questions that were received. We'll follow up with the additional information as requested. And until next time, thank you.
Thank you. As we had no independent members, there was no time allotted for questions by an independent member. I ask for a motion to adjourn. So moved by MHA Hagee. Second. by MHA Tibbs. All those in favor? Aye. Ask MHA Reed. How do we vote? Carried.
I vote in favor.
I call for an adjournment and that the next meeting will be at the chair of the committee. And thank you again to everybody for coming out this morning and taking part, and especially to all the staff who took part. Again, thank you.